It is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is March 14, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis, and this is the Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we're going to check what the negotiation in Geneva is happening for the Syrian people. While we're looking at pictures everywhere where children in Syria are playing, they feel safe to go outside, and the deliveries of food and UNICEF is there helping them and assisting them in the day and not hiding anymore. The idea of a ceasefire is a blessing for everybody. And while we are, struggling to start re generate some, comprehensive understanding, there are people working very, very hard in Geneva. They're working hard to talk to the opposition, to the resistance, and they're trying to calm the situation. We have some segments that we would like to let you listen from a few hours ago. Let's listen to them.
But the real peacemakers here are the peacemaking powers who wanted these talks, the ISSG and the Security Council members, and hopefully the Syrian sides. If during these talks and in the next rounds we will see no notice of any willingness to negotiate, which we hope is not going to be the case, obviously, we will do what we want to do and we have done. We'll bring the issue back to those who have influence, and that is the Russian Federation, the USA, co-chairs of the ISSG, and to the Security Council. The alternative, some people call it Plan B, as you know. Well, as far as I know, the only Plan B available is return to war, and to even worse war than we had so far. My line on future of Syria is the one which the Secretary General has been maintaining. It is up, frankly, to the Syrian people to vote, elect, decide. But we need to help them. And one way to help them through the international community is having these 3 points of 2254. At the end of the day, it will be up to them to decide how to run their own country.
The importance of having a good preparation for the form so as to be able to launch our work on a sound basis towards a more substantive debate. There was mutual understanding between us and the Special Envoy on the importance of this aspect, which is the importance of a good preparation and having a clear picture so as to reach an understanding and consensus on the framework of the dialogue in terms of the form or format. Because in diplomatic work,
الإطار الشكلي يتحكم بنسبة عالية
بنجاح
الجزء الجوهري.
Is very important to achieve substantive success.
الإعداد الجيد. سننتقل إلى مرحلة الإعداد الجيد للجولة الثانية أو للجلسة الثانية بيننا وبين السيد المبعوث الخاص.
That we will hold with the
وهي
special
جلسة
envoy.
ستتم يوم الأربعاء.
Second session will take place on Wednesday.
Thank the Swiss Parliament and the Swiss government.
And then we also came up with the fact that the next meeting
which is expected to take place in the morning on Wednesday. So there is time to metabolize and consult capitals and back. We'll be focusing on the agenda. And the agenda, as you know, is the agenda set up by Resolution 2254. It was a useful meeting, and I think we clarified quite a lot of issues. Thank you.
Wow, amazing. Let's see if we can listen to the next one. And also we can talk about the resolution on Security Council 2254. It's important, you know, to be, and I hope you can hear me now. It's important to understand that there is a Security Council resolution 2254 to endorse a roadmap for peace in process in Syria, setting a timetable for talks, and this Wednesday they're going to continue. Now, it's really, really tricky because I know that there are some segments of the negotiation party that wants to have the Kurds as part of the negotiation team, but for some reason the Turks are objecting it. And whatever happened in Ankara, in the latest news that we heard about the big bombings there, maybe be a result of her objection and her stubbornness in the process. You see, Turkey is holding a very harsh line with the Kurds, and the farther they go on, they need to understand that Turkey needs to settle the issues with the Kurds. I think that the other segment is ready. Let's listen to that.
Huge night last night. Did you have any idea that you were going to win as big as you did?
Well, I felt good. I mean, Mississippi, I was there three or four times, and it was like a love fest, and so I felt very good about it. Michigan has been great. It's been great for me for a long time. I have so many friends there, and I had no idea it would be that big.
Do you think it's the message on trade, particularly in Michigan, that was effective? Because we see Sanders winning as well there with a very similar message on trade.
I think they want strength. I think they want military. I think they want to take care of vets. I think they hate Obamacare. But I would say...
I'm back to, we're going to put Donald Trump in a second, but let's restart the issue about the Syrian. I have some news that, some learning and studying for the children is happening on the ground, and they're hoping to set the schools up and about in Damascus. That's what the Gyrus organization is making or advertising. There is some people who will take care of it, and they are teaching the children. Now, we need to insist that the ceasefire is going to evolve and stay, because those people cannot be in war anymore. And I know that the Assad regime wants to stay there in order for them to continue run the country. And in 18 months, they're going to have a big election. But if Assad is going to stay, the country will be divided in three segments, which won't be Syria anymore. It will be divided. So I'm not sure it's going to work. And the international organization are not going to set for it. But whatever it is, we're wishing them luck, and we hope that those Syrian children will be happier, and all the rest will come home, because running the border in Macedonia these days is a tricky business. So So let's go on and listen to what the hottest news is around. I know that we had St. Patrick's Day, and I hope you had a wonderful, wonderful day, and you stayed careful and you know, keep it cool. But the election in America is something that all the world is talking about. It. Donald Trump brought it to the attention of the world, and the idea of having Donald Trump as the new American president is really getting closer to reality, even though that Hillary and Sanders are swearing it's not going to happen, and Ted Cruz, but the chances are slim to none. Let's listen to what is Stark talking about this latest.
Huge night last night. Did you have any idea that you were going to win as big as you did?
Well, I felt good. I mean, Mississippi, I was there three or four times, and it was like a love fest, and so I felt very good about it. Michigan has been great. It's been great for me for a long time. I have so many friends there, and I had no idea it would be that big.
Do you think it's the message on trade, particularly in Michigan, that was effective? Because we see Sanders winning as well there with a very similar message on trade.
I think they want strength. I think they want military. I think they want to take care of vets. I think they hate Obamacare. But I would say ultimately it's about jobs and the economy. And, you know, Michigan's been stripped. You look at those empty factories all over the place, and nobody hits that message better than me. I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to stop it. I'm going to stop the craziness that's going on. If you look at what's happening, even today, I mean, we're just shipping company after company after company is leaving this country and leaving jobs behind. And I'm going to get it stopped.
Two new polls out today, Quinnipiac, also a CNN one, both showing essentially the same thing. You are way ahead here in Florida, almost, I think, 2-1 against Rubio, and even in Ohio, leading Kasich 6 points and 7 points in each poll. If you win Florida, if you win Ohio, is it over?
I think so, yeah. I think if I win those two, I think it's over. And I thought Kasich said after Michigan he was going to drop out, to be honest with you. He was saying that he will win Michigan. He will win it easily. And
he's now saying Ohio. If he doesn't win Ohio.
Now he's saying Ohio. But no, he said Michigan. He would said, you know, it's his neighbor. And he said he's going to win Michigan. And he was pretty confident of Michigan. And I thought he said he was going to drop out if he lost Michigan. But I guess he's not going to do that. So I think we're going to do very well in Ohio. I know Ohio very well. Have many, many
you
friends.
You think he'll win there?
Well, even Paul O'Neill of the Yankees endorsed me. He's from Ohio. Great guy. And he endorsed me last night at the press conference. I think I'll win Ohio, yeah. And I think we just have better policies. The country is sick and tired of what they're seeing. The country is sick and tired of these politicians that talk, and it's all talk, no action, and they're tired of it, Anderson.
So if Kasich drops, if you win Ohio, Kasich drops out, and you win Florida, and Rubio's gone, and it's just you and Cruz, if you don't get all the delegates needed to win by the convention.
Well, I think if I win Ohio and if I win Florida, pretty much, you're going to be pretty much assured of doing that.
You think you'll get all the delegates?
I think so, yeah. I really think so. I don't see the convention going that route. I see probably getting the delegates. You know, it's like the fighters. That's the ultimate way of doing it. You knock them out. If you knock them out, nothing can happen.
You want to go for a knockout?
I'd rather go for a knockout, yes.
If you get to the convention, though, and you don't have the delegates, is any kind of a deal acceptable to you other than you getting the nomination?
Well, then you have to fight it out, but, you know, it's really unfair. Let's say you get there and you're a few short, but you have 1,200, let's say, and somebody else had 500 or 600, because I'm way ahead. And, you know, in all fairness to Ted, he said he's the only one that beats me, but he doesn't say I beat him two or three times for every time he wins one. And we've won the important ones. We've won the big ones, and we won last night. I mean, last night was a romp. So, you know, look, Ted, the problem with Ted is he walks in with the Bible, holds up the Bible. You know, I call him Lion Ted.
I've heard that.
Puts down the Bible, and then he lies. I've never seen a man lie this much. But even with
You think for a guy who says he's very religious, you're surprised?
No, Ted, I call him Lion Ted. He's Lion Ted. And, you know, that's his name. And I think, frankly, that name is stuck because the evangelicals are on my side. They don't like liars. Evangelicals do not like liars.
So if it goes to convention, you don't have... You're a couple short or a couple hundred short. For you, that doesn't matter. It's got to be you as the nominee.
Well,
no
it,
other deal is acceptable to you.
I think this. If you go to the convention, and because of some artificial number that they set, if you go to the convention and you're leading by a lot of delegates, I think you should get the nomination. And that'll be me. I mean, I'll have far more delegates. Now, whether or not I get to that artificial number, I don't know, but I think I will.
You've had a lot of money thrown against you just these last couple of weeks.
There's never been anything like it.
This whole Never Trump movement, is it dead, do you think?
Well, I think it's mortally wounded. I do think it's mortally wounded. Look, Marco had a very rough night. He got no delegates. He got nothing. And that was a very, very bad night. And, you know, when people have hit me in this, if you watch, and it's been the story of my life, I better knock on wood, but everybody that's hit me has gone down. They all came at me. Perry came at me. I could go through. Lindsey Graham came at me. Bush came at me. Every one of them came at me. And every one of them that's come at me has gone down. And wouldn't it be nice to have that happen with our country, where we can very simply win again?
So what do you think was Rubio's demise?
I think he tried to be Don Rickles, frankly. You know, he wanted to be Don Rickles, and he's not Don Rickles. And it took me by surprise. I mean, I'm standing at one of the debates, and all of a sudden he got nasty. And he was very nasty.
Did he get under your skin?
No, he didn't. And nobody gets under my skin. I mean, you have to handle it. But he was really rude. And in fact, for a while, I wasn't even sure if what I was seeing was right. Then he had a horrible debate with Chris Christie where he folded. I mean, he totally, you know, choked. And you know the expression, once a choker, always a choker.
Do you think going after you, you know, with jokes, with humor, with insults, that took him off his message?
I think so. He wasn't really joking. I mean, he was insulting. And, you know, made up insults and nasty insults.
And it weakened him, you think, in the long term?
It turned out to. I didn't know it would. I mean, I think I hit him very hard. I probably hit him much harder. But maybe for me it's more natural. It wasn't natural for him and took him off his game. Amazing. I've never seen anything like it. And he went from being, you know, from doing pretty good to now he's at the bottom of the pack.
I want to ask you about Cruz in a minute, but just in a big picture, have you given much thought to how you want to define the GOP? I mean, you will be not only the nominee, you will be the standard bearer for the Republican Party. How do you want to redefine the GOP?
Okay, well, I think the biggest story in all of politics all over the world right now, I've been on the cover of Time magazine four times in the last short number of months, I mean, because of what's happening. There's a movement, and it's millions and millions of people that are disgusted with the incompetence of our politicians and our leaders, if you want to call them that. I don't even call them that. I hate to use
Republicans and Democrats.
Republicans and Democrats. And I'll get to the Republicans in a second, because they're blowing a great opportunity. So you have primaries, and millions of people more are going to the primaries and voting. And in all fairness, it's because of me. I'm not going to joke. It's not because of Ted Cruz, who nobody cares about. Millions of people are going to the polls, more people than did 4 years ago, and did ever. By the way, ever. You report on it. You don't report on it even as big as it should, but millions of people, it's the biggest story. And people come up to me, Mr. Trump, when I'm signing autographs or I'm shaking hands, Mr. Trump, 50 years old, 60 years old, I've never voted before, but I'm so proud to be voting. I've never wanted to vote.
So you want a more populist GOP?
No. I'll tell you what. I'm a conservative person. I don't think the labels matter. You know, they say he is not, Jeb Bush used to say, he is not a conservative. Okay, he used to go, he is not a conservative. I say, what difference does it make? I mean, who cares? I have very conservative views. But one view that probably isn't considered conservative, but it is smart trade. I want smart trade.
Right, your position is actually similar to Bernie Sanders in some way. I mean, you're both sort of critical of NAFTA.
Except I can do something about it. The difference between Sanders and I watched him recently, and he's right about one thing. The world is ripping us off on trade. It's been a horrible thing. It's been a horrible, horrible experiment. I've been against it for years, Anderson. You know, if you look back, I'd been against it. In fact, your friend Wolf Blitzer actually did a tape of his interviews with me from like 15, 17 years ago. And I was saying the same thing, a little bit different nations, like Japan was really ripping.
But your position is pretty un-Republican. I mean, Larry Kudlow, who, you know, is positive about your corporate tax policy, he's critical of you on trade.
Yeah.
He says that essentially it's going to be raising prices for people on consumer goods, on electronics, on cars, on other items, and it's essentially a tax on people who can't afford it.
No, I've heard Larry, and let me just tell you what's going to happen from a practical standpoint, from a negotiating standpoint. The world is ripping us off because of manipulation, monetary manipulation, devaluations, okay? They are brilliant. The greatest player of them all is China. Nobody has ever played the valuation game with their currency better. It's currency devaluation than China. China is a grandmaster. Japan is doing very well. but some of these countries are just absolute masters at it. When we start getting tough and they think that we're serious, and I'm totally serious, I'd put a tax on in 2 seconds.
You've talked about a 45% tax
on different goods. Taxes. I've also said, I didn't say I was going to put it, I said use it as a negotiating tool, and I would if we couldn't make the right deal.
But that would raise prices for consumer goods.
China just devalued their currency recently more than they have at any time for more than 2 decades. This was like shocking. And the only reason they did it is because we're weak and we have no leadership. It makes it impossible for our companies to compete with Chinese companies and China generally, okay? It makes it absolutely impossible. The threat of me doing this, for instance, the threat of doing it against Japan or China, you tell Japan, by the way, when your cars come in, you're going to have to pay a 35% tax. I use 35%. I only use 45% if somebody's really egregious. And, of course, now you have many people that are really egregious.
But so you're seeing this as a negotiation tactic.
Oh, absolutely.
Tactic.
And you know what's going to happen? When they see that we're not playing games, that we'll really do it, because I would do it in a heartbeat. I'd love to do it. When they see that we're not playing games, they're going to stop playing with their currencies, and they're going to stop taking our jobs to the extent that they're taking them right now.
Was Donald Trump talking on Fox News about the situation and of his race? And as you know, people are in awe of what's going on around Donald Trump. There are some that they will say that it's more aggressive. There are some will say that there is like a worship zone. And as far as I'm concerned, I will tell you, may the good guy win, because America needs a good guy. The world deserves a good guy or girl. And we really, really hope and pray for America's sake that she can go back to set her stage agenda on the universal stage, because it's not easy to be without American leadership. And even though John Kerry is got sent to the negotiation in Geneva, we don't really feel that the American weight is in play. And what I mean that the world is listening. To listen to the world, to American voice, is essential for the world to know what is good, what is right, and, you know, to keep the moral value in this world. And, of course, the president is doing his best, and the world is collapsing, not because he did anything wrong. It's because the emotion started with the liberation of the idea of democracy. Once you start with the idea, like President Bush started, putting democracy in the mindset of people, then come President Obama and relieve them, told them that there is a way, there is a possibility, and they can do it. And of course, they had to dismantle the old regime, and you cannot create a new world if you don't destroy the old one. Or leave the old way. So, of course, it seems that everything is in shambles, but if you think about it, it's the recreation of a new world that is happening. But right now, once you start with a new world idea, you need to create an agenda, to set an agenda of what's going on. And there was a moment not long ago that the French wanted to impose some deal on the Israeli with the idea of the Palestinian state. And I'm not going to talk about it for long, because it's really impossible to understand how, in the midst of all this crisis, universal crisis, and we all agree to that, because terror is everywhere. Of course, it's in the Middle East. That's where it's happening. But you have a million of people moving around the area. And all of a sudden, you want to put the gun to the peace accord and say, now make peace. It's not happening. And of course, now that Fabius is gone, the foreign minister of French is gone, and we have a new one that has more sense to say, we're not going to force them, we're not going to agree on anything. We're sending an envoy, we're going to examine the situation, and we take it. Because after all, we have an understanding that peace is something that you do with your enemy. But if your enemy wants to kill you, it's not really a peaceful solution, right? So let's keep on going. But meanwhile, we need to access others. We need to help people with refugees. Maybe, you know, the Gaza Strip needs to be regenerated in an economical structure that can help the people who live there, and maybe they'll stop looking into terror as a result while nobody's paying. But as long as Iran is opening and paying for every terrorist, we cannot stop the cycle of violence. And that's where the world and the USA come to play. Once you let Iran pay for terrorism, you cannot endorse it. It's not about anything mean or obstinate to Iran. It's just Iran cannot play in the world agenda and world stage if she's acting up, if she's trying missiles, and if she's making it impossible for the world to stabilize the situation in Syria and elsewhere. And Hezbollah, of course, is the voice of them in Lebanon, and I know that it's not going to be there for long because something is going to change there too, because the area is all covered, right? If you look at the area, it's important. Anyway, I got some music for you. Let's have something to cheer us up, all right? That was wonderful. The Beatles, as always, incredible. Now, once we're talking about Donald Trump and the situation, of course, we are trying to get the American leadership into the world affair back. And, you know, Secretary of State John Kerry is doing a fine job keeping America in the game. Because if not him, I don't know where is American voice around. It's not heard, okay? It's not heard. And once we have Donald Trump that wants to negotiate everything and wants to make trade everywhere, you can bet on it that it's going to be all over the planet. Now, the idea is to get American economy in motion so we can create the defense mechanism needed, the infrastructure for, you know, world leadership. And you need a lot of resources for that. And of course, America spends most of its resources in the 10 years in Iraq in defense. And, you know, you cannot blame anybody on this, but it's about time that the world will chip in. And today there is like kind of referendum in Germany about the condition of Angela Merkel and what she was doing with the immigrants, because they are destabilizing the region. So if you think that she's in play, and of course the English are trying to get off the European Union restrictions, maybe they're going to pull off. You're going to have selected ideas coming out and about the world and how it's going to play. Now, let's assume that Donald Trump is coming to power. Let's see what he's going to do. First of all, he's a nice guy. You can say whatever you want. I remember him from many years ago, and when the people were making jokes, it was incredible. I remember I walked into some of his plans of, you know, a building, which is incredible phenomenon. And I was witnessing him through all this, romantic stages that he went through. And he's a man. is a kind man, is very ballsy, and of course to have so much crowd around him takes a lot of charisma, a lot of energy, and a lot of know-how. And he knows it out. Trust me, it's impossible to get the crowd rallying around you. It's really impossible if you have nothing to sell, or even if you sell, but you don't know how to sell. And he does, though. And you get respect everywhere. Now, as far as the Middle East goes, he understands terrorism as far as, you know, bad guy and good guys. And coming from New York, he gets the music. He can understand it very well. And you don't need to be really, you know, into the game to understand that the bad guys are everywhere, all around. And he might be, you know, choosing great teams. So once you have a good team, you can do anything you want. Now, let's see how it's going to be with Israel. Israel in the region is going to be it's going to be positive. It's going to be good. New, fresh set of idea will be really, really welcome around here. To think about Hillary is really a no-no for Israel at this stage. I know that she and Netanyahu are not going to get along, like the Clinton never got along with Benjamin Netanyahu, so it's going to be devastating for Israel. Even though I have nothing against her, but I'm just talking from the point. If Benjamin Netanyahu is going to stay in power still for the next few years, it's going to be real hard. To think how Donald Trump is going to play with Netanyahu, well, it's going to be a little sticky because Donald Trump is a very warm guy. He's very good and he likes respect. Netanyahu is cordial, of course, but is very egocentric too. So with two egos running ragged, it's not going to be useful. However, I'm sure that Donald Trump is the old in the group is going to be thinking well. So I have no doubt that he knows how to manage his way around, especially when he has some people working, you know, in the business section. You have a lot of people that are working together that can understand the issue. And I don't think that it's going to be a bias. I don't think it's going to be, you know, one-sided. I think that it's going to be fair. And fair is the game that he's playing, and God bless him for that. All right. So I got one segment that I was intrigued with. It's about the black guy that spoke about Trump. He's a Trump supporter. And how the black trying to bully him to, you know, to disengage from the Trump. But he's insisting. He wants to support Trump. He wants his future and to depend on it. Let's see if we can get that segment. All right?
I just saw the lie, the great lie.
You're living on a great lie. You're voting for a great lie.
No, I'm not.
You're going to be voting a great lie in office. Are you serious?
I'm voting for the future.
What future? The future going to look like fucking X-Men Apocalypse when that shit comes out, man. Damn.
That
makes me really fucking dead.
I'm voting for the future of my people. I don't want...
There is no future for us if you vote Trump in. Dude, show me the title. Let's go get some chimichangas or something. Damn.
I'm voting for Trump because I want jobs, not welfare. I don't want to be a slave anymore to the
You're
government.
Gonna be a slave?
No, I'm not. I want a job. I want to work for my own money. I want to have a house. I want to pay for my own stuff with my money that I made from work. I don't want handouts. I don't want handouts. I want freedom. I want actual freedom.
I want you to get woke, and I want you to stay woke.
Dude, do you have a cell phone on you, dog? You have a cell phone? Can I give you something to listen to that will kind of change your mind about this?
It won't.
I promise you it will, my brother. I promise you it will, my brother.
What he needs to do, I am aware.
You have to seek your real truth. Yeah, you got to find
that in yourself, my brother. When you went through the school system, your culture was already taken away. So you had no idea to know how great you really are. As a black man, you don't know. You don't know. It ain't your fault. It's not your fault.
We can keep saying that we are great all the time, but in reality, we are not. Look at us. Look at what we've become.
Look at what
we've become. What do you mean, look at we've become? No, look at what this country made us. Look at what this country.
All right, that was a noisy segment. However, giving you the idea how hot-spirited it is, there is a black guy, a Trump supporter, who say he wants his future. He wants to work for his future. He wants to earn a living. He doesn't want to have a handout. And those other black guy, that one of them was masqueraded, you could hear his voice muffled, were insisting that Donald Trump is not the answer. And I don't know what the black person thought, that, you know, Hillary Clinton is the answer, or, Sanders is a socialist. The socialism is, you know, it's poverty, in, you know, that you can sing Kumbaya with. But the idea of the black resisting so much Donald Trump, where is no indication that Clinton is going to take them elsewhere, make no sense. However, it's valid. Whatever they choose, it's democracy, they can do it. But I commend this black man, fellow, that said and insisted. And I know that you have a lot of black Republican who can feel that same feeling. All right. Let's get some more music, and we'll be back after that.
Don't let me down.
Back, it's Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth on BBS Radio, and we are almost 15 to the hour, and it will be a really interesting week, because things are changing, life is shifting, the Syrian talks are in order. We have an envoy from France on the ground arriving today to Israel, where they're going to set some stage for talks or understanding for a better day for tomorrow for everybody. Let's hope. And while we are struggling with the idea that, you know, change is imminent, that things are going to change, we can only hope that it's going to be better, because it cannot go any worse than that. The world is running ragged, and we need to get a hold of everybody and try to make sense out of it. And now let me give you my sense, my two cents on the deal. I see it as it is. Right now we have the Israeli government doing its best to keep up with the terrorists that running in the street of Israel. It's sporadic. It's nothing that you can understand. No F-35 can help, and no, submarine can sabotage. It's terrorism per se. People, children, are taught to go. I think that they see too much games in the computer, because they imitate it and they die, and it's pity. And in Israel, security is nothing that they are going to take a chance with, and you cannot blame anybody for that. I want to save those children's lives, but they need to get back to school and get a life. And I'm sure, guys, if we start talking sense, we can start building. And if people will start understanding that those areas that the Arab Israeli elite, because Palestinian is people of the ground, you know, people of the ground, if they didn't choose to be of another state, they belong to Israel right now. And if there is an agreement, okay, they can go. But right now, let us help them. Let's build Jerusalem. It's the holy city for everybody. And I'm saying it again and again, but I want to remind you guys that you all are responsible to this incredible situation. Those children, the Israeli, Palestinian, or Israel Arabs are in is Jerusalem. And Mr. Cameron, please don't come lecturing Israel when you guys are tying our hands not to help them build school, road, infrastructure, and hospitals or anything. You don't let us build a brick, put a brick to the ground there. So please, and wherever it is, if you guys want to take care of Jerusalem, you should have been there 50 years ago. Or let's say in the construction of Israel, it's in 48, before that. You should have taken care of Jerusalem, and you did not. So it's negligence by the world to pretend to keep a city, international city, on Israel time, Israel money, and, you know, bully Israel by all means, and pretend that you have no idea what we're talking about when we're calling it the capital of Israel. Now, you have the responsibility for the holy land, for the holy city of Jerusalem, to bring your embassy and be a part of the holy city. If not, you cannot take any part of it, or you cannot influence it. And I'm not talking about a consulate general that is in East Jerusalem servicing the Arab only, pretending to service everybody. But we all know that, you know, you can't get a visa from the East Jerusalem office for some reason. Right? Let's be frank. Let's be honest. It's about time you take care of it. And it's under God. And it's you. It's your responsibility with God's witnessing it all. So I'm sure that maybe somebody will come to his senses. So let's go back. Let's start building holy places. Let's start building the future. Let's make a deal. The Syrian going to stop. The refugees going to take care of. America is going to get some good president in the White House, God willing. All right? So since we have a few minutes to go, I want to say that there is other news that I wanted to share with you. And let's see if we can put the Euro news, something from the Euro, European news, before I let you go.
As Ireland takes over the presidency of the Council of the European Union, Euronews speaks to Irish Prime Minister Enda Kenny about its future. One of the first issues he will have to deal with is Britain's desire to renegotiate the terms of its membership.
So, Taoiseach, thanks very much for being with us here on Euronews. Should a country seeking to repatriate powers from the EU be able to do so, or should they just leave the club altogether?
Well, I can't speak for the British government. But what I do know is that, as the leader of my own country, we have a very close relationship with Britain and have had for many years. In fact, we signed a strategic partnership agreement last year with them. But leaving that aside, Britain was a driver of the single market, is an important and fundamental element of the European Union. And in my view, it would be catastrophic were Britain to opt to leave the European Union. So I think if you are removed from outside that single market and have no influence on the conditions that apply there, it wouldn't be I would think, in the interest of any particular country. So I do hope that the issue of Britain opting to stay a fundamental part of the Union continues. I think it would be, as I said, absolutely catastrophic whether to leave.
Should member states be able to cherry-pick which parts of the EU they like? I mean, should it be in or out?
This is a European Union of which there are conditions set to become a member. And the same conditions apply for all the members. And in theory, if you were to say, OK, you can revise membership for one country, well, then you might have a lot of other applicants as well.
And now, you've said that you're confident of a bank debt deal by the end of March. Given the noises coming out of Berlin, are you still confident about that?
Mm-hmm. This is in two phases. Obviously, you will appreciate that Ireland, as a small country, was one of the first into an EU IMF programme and was required because of European policy at the time, a number of years ago, that no bank should fail. They had to borrow 64 billion and pay that back by our taxpayers, which is an enormous burden. So it's divided into two sections, if you like. One element of that is the requirement to have promissory notes, and we are the only country that have a situation like this, requiring our people to pay 3 billion every March for 10 years. The other end of the argument is in respect of other banks, and which will now follow on the consequence of the decision taken last 29th of June to break the link between sovereign and bank debt.
Now, what else will Ireland offer in return? Because we have Francois Hollande, who in December said you need greater harmonisation of corporate tax rates in Europe. Is that something that you're willing to offer, that under your premiership there'd be an increase in the corporate tax rate? Because Mr. Hollande says it's a sort of fiscal dumping in a way.
Well, Ireland will not be changing its corporate tax rate. It's 12.5%, that's 11.9% effective. It's been that way for years. Tax is a matter of national competence, as enshrined in the treaties, so there won't be any change in the corporate tax rate of Ireland. There are other countries in the Union who have corporate tax rates of less than 20% now. So it's an issue, but it's not the issue. And Ireland's corporate tax rate will not be changing. Now, we don't support a financial transaction tax, for instance.
Why is that?
Because we have a very vibrant international financial services centre in Dublin, employing 35,000 people. And you didn't want to put that at a disadvantage against London, where Britain would be opposed to the financial transaction tax. But we do support enhanced cooperation. And actually, the first item on the agenda for the next Eurogroup meeting is the financial transaction tax. And Ireland will not stand in its way once more than 11 countries wish to support that. And we've made that perfectly clear.
But isn't there an argument that the banks that, very recently people would say, caused this crisis, they should pay their way? Why should it fall on ordinary citizens?
Of course, and the situation that would apply in respect of the discussions that take place under the EMS and with the Eurogroup, that's the intent of that decision, that the EMS could have the opportunity and the capacity to potentially recapitalise banks. And the intention there would be that it should never be the public again. And Ireland is the only country, where the public have been required to repay very high levels of money at very high interest rates. And that's why we need support from our European colleagues, which has been committed to us, to enable us to emerge from the programme this year.
We had a debate here in the Parliament about the youth guarantee. Do you believe the states can really guarantee a job to anybody?
I think guarantee is maybe slightly the wrong word here. I think it's youth opportunity, it's youth endeavour. I was coming back from Budapest recently and I called in to see Chancellor Fehmarn in Vienna, and we went to look at a youth training centre. And the level of unemployment among young people in Austria is less than 3%, practically negligible. It's over 50% in some countries, it's 29% in Ireland. This is unacceptable. So I think it's a case of Europe learning from best practice in other countries as to what you can do. So I'd expect now that in this 6 months that Ireland will make a real drive at implementing the youth guarantee scheme, the youth opportunity scheme, so that young people can understand that political platforms can be put in place to give them a chance, an opportunity.
And you feel they don't understand that at the moment, because 87,000 people left Ireland last year.
It's completely unacceptable that you have 26 million unemployed throughout the European Union, and that young people leave our country. Now, I was in China some time ago. I met 500 Irish people. They all want to be there by choice because they see real opportunities. The ones I feel sorry for are those who leave because they don't have a sense of hope and they go to seek work in other countries.
And just turning quickly to the domestic agenda, your abortion laws are up for debate at the moment. Do you think the proposals that are currently being discussed go far enough? And would you put them to a referendum?
No, there won't be another referendum. We've had referenda on this sensitive question in Ireland over the last 30 years. We've already had information hearings by the parliamentary committee where people came in with a sense of dignity and respect and humanity and discussed all of these things. So what government are going to do is to deal with this through a matter of putting in a legal base and regulation on top of that. And that will provide a framework where legal certainty will be given to medical personnel who have to intervene in the case of a crisis pregnancy where the life of the mother is threatened. And on the other end of that determination, to deal with the question of where a woman who's pregnant is suicidal and what that means. And that's a difficulty because it's very difficult to determine that. So that's work that will be conducted, you know, in a very calm and rational and dignified manner, and we will deal with it through legislation and regulation as we are required to do. And it's only on that very narrow line. This is not in any way to have moves towards people's perceptions of abortion on demand. That is not what's in question here.
Okay, well, Taoiseach Enda Kenny, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you indeed.
Thank you for your time.
And that was it. It's really Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth today on Monday, March 14. I hope you had a wonderful time. I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope that everybody around you will be love and care. And remember, there is a God and it's not us. And I wanted to thank Doug Newsom for wonderful work he's doing on BBS Radio. God bless you all. We'll talk next Monday. Call me if you want. All the best and God bless.
Ciao, ciao.